yeah, this has been most enjoyable actually in my stay here, and relaxing way of talking to other people and keeping away from, as you said, from departmental duties. I decided probably to talk about collision models, but rather than giving an overview of the whole field, which is receiving a description of a quantum system, which has received a lot of attention recently, because it's turning out to be a rather powerful and convenient way to describe open system dynamics. The idea is to describe the basic idea of the technique and its motivation, and try to convince you that it has a substantial number of advantages. If one thinks carefully, actually the idea, what do we mean by collision models of open system dynamics? In this model, we'll see in detail, one describes the environment as an ensemble of a large number of sub-environments, which I'll often call ancillas. And the interaction between system and environment takes place through a sequence of possibly short, possibly strong, but sometimes weak, depending on the details of the model. Anyway, by a series of interaction between system and environment. If one thinks carefully, it has from the very beginning, and when in classical physics already, when people try to describe, for instance, Brownian motion. Brownian motion or Langevin equations in general, you describe the interaction between the particle and the surrounding gas or liquid as a series of collision, stochastic, and which determine the average, which determine the individual trajectory, the individual sequence of speeds and velocities and position of the particles, but also allow you, given you know the statistical properties of the environment, also to describe the time evolution of the average values. On the other hand, the system describes several true kind of interaction between system and environment, also in the quantum regime. We have heard yesterday that actually one of the ways in which we acquire information about a system is by looking at it. So by looking at the photons which are scattered from the source to your eye, and you measure the photons, I mean your retina receives the photon one by one, and after the photons one by one have interacted with your objects. And on the other hand, some, let's say, more or less artificial interaction between system and environment have been engineered in terms of a sequence of collisions. A typical example is the micromesa. Okay, I'll go to the micromesa shortly. So in collision models or open system dynamics, basically you start from this idea that the environment consists of several, at the moment, let's assume as independent, but we will see how it is possible in principle to relax this assumption, a large set of independent sub-environments, we'll call them ancillas often, and the interaction between system and environment takes place through a sequence of such collisions. By collision, I mean a unitary interaction between system and environment. In this perspective, I mean, there is the first paper I managed to find on this topic is by Rao, and it's a physical review published in 1963. Rao was a student. I learned recently she's a lady. Now she must be in her 80s probably, and she was probably the first student of Sudarshan. And her interest was to look at thermalization of what now we would call qubit, basically spin, through a sequence of interaction with the harmonic oscillators. I mean, sequence of rapid interaction, very short. And the same idea was again developed independently and clearly unaware of this early work by Rao, but Zeeman and Buzek and Scarani, in two papers a PRL in 2002 and a Physical Review A in 2005. exactly the same idea. They started looking at thermalization of in a qubit, and then they extended the idea to what they call homogenization. Okay, what I mean by thermalization is easy. Homogenization will be clear soon. I will start drawing pictures and figures on how we model the interaction between system and environment. And again, what was different between the difference from these two papers and the original paper by Rao is that in the meanwhile, there was the birth of quantum information theory. So in these two papers by Zeeman and Buzek, and there were some few others, but these two are the more relevant ones, in my viewpoint, you begin to look on how entanglement and information gets diluted from the system to the environment. In the early 2000s, the typical language was to look at concurrence. Okay, so people looked at homogenization and the dilution of quantum information in terms of concurrence and pairwise entanglement between the system and the ancillaries. What are the advantages of the other advantages of this formalism? Well, first is nice, and secondly, it guarantees if in the case in which the collision times is short, you can derive, I'll show you how to do it, a master equation. So you can go from a description in terms of completely multi-positive map to description in terms of master equation. But by construction, the master equation we will get, which for the simplest, the memoryless case, it will be Markovian, will be by construction completely positive. So the dynamics, of course, you will see it will be in Lindblad form. But the interesting point is that you can add new ingredients, and you can relax the assumption of, for instance, independent collisions or independent environmental ancilla. And this allows you to derive master equations which are non-Markovian, because you can take into account memory effect, but which are for sure and by construction completely positive. I assume that you are familiar with the idea of complete positivity, but we'll come to it shortly. Another interesting point is the fact that if in the collision model, you have a way in which you can look at the dynamics of movement. The environment is not something which is simply traced out, but it's something that in principle you can look at. And this has two implications. On the one hand, it provides you a neat description of the quantum trajectory approach to open system dynamics. If you look at each of the ancilla after the collision with the environment, you can follow, you project indirectly the state of the system, and you can follow the individual trajectory of your quantum system. This is not just a simulation technique, it's something that in quantum optics has been is regularly observed in the lab. And on the other hand, the collision description of open system dynamics allows you to quantify the amount of energy that the system exchanges with each subunit of the environment. And therefore, it is very convenient if you want to carry out a quantum thermodynamic approach, a quantum thermodynamic analysis of your dynamics. And on the other hand, given that you can follow step by step the amount of information that the environment gains about your system, for instance, this provides a nice framework to analyze weak measurements of Darwinism, yesterday. I mean, you can follow the amount of information the environment gains about your system step by step. So the environment is not something that simply you trash out, but something that you can observe, you can measure. Okay, so let's start with the basic idea. Let's look at how you get a dynamical map starting from unitary dynamics. You've got an interaction between system and environment, okay? The system is in density operator rho, and the environment in general is in a density operator eta. I think for basically all I've been talking about, with no loss of generality, I will assume eta to be a pure state of the system, which I'll label as zero. But this, the technique can be easily extended to the case in which the environment is mixed. And system and environment interact with the unitary, and then you trace out, the trash is just trace, trace out the environment degrees of freedom, and you, this is the input, and this is the and this is output density operator. So basically what you do, you trace over the environment. This is something you all know, but just for convenience, let's do the calculation together. You trace over the environment you assume, you let the system and the environment evolve through a unitary, so that's the density operator of the system. That's for the environment. And this is rho out. In other words, you take a particular basis in which you evaluate your sum, and assuming that the environment is in this pure state, you get this. Now, you see, this is a partial matrix element of the unitary, and therefore is still an operator acting on your system, and this leaves what is called the Krauss representation of your map, where A is this, and this is A dagger. Again, you can extend the formula to the case in which you are using mixed state instead of pure one. Okay, in this formula, you got an input and an output. There is no time. Everything is in this unitary.
Draw k's are what?
Sorry?
Draw k, is it draw k?
This we? No, it's E. It's an EK. This is
okay.
E is a complete set for the... I should write money. It's a complete set for the environment. Of course, the choice in which you can do the trace is not unique. And you can evaluate the trace using a different basis, and this will give you a different set of Krauss operators. And we will see that once we go from the Krauss operator to the master equation, we will identify jump operators for the describing dynamics of the system, and looking having different choice of basis for the environment will lead you to a different unraveling, to a different quantum trajectory of your system. Just to remind you, a trace means what? That you look at your system, this is supposed to be an I, but you ignore the outcome, you trash the outcome of your measurement. Okay? So evaluating a trace amounts to making a specific measurement of the state of the environment according to a specific basis, but then you ignore what the outcome is. You simply trash it. Okay. Using a different basis means that you're doing a measuring the environment according to a different observable, you're making a different choice of what to observe with the environment. But anyway, at the end, you ignore it. Of course, when you unravel your master equation, when you look at the trajectory of your quantum system as a consequence of the measuring the environment, the system will have different quantum trajectories and will follow, you will originate a different unraveling. But we'll come to this shortly. Okay, the idea is the following. Now we want time to enter in the description of the dynamics. Okay, this is an input, an output, everything is described by this U. A way in which you go from a map to a master equation is to iterate the process. So basically you've got a sequence of such collision, okay? Eta, that's the initial density operator, rho zero, and you get rho one, and then here you trace. This is rho two after the second collision, and then again you trace. This is again, there's always u. Okay, this is rho n minus one, this is rho n. What are our assumptions? The assumption is that A, you are At each collision, you are refreshing the state of your environment. Okay? So this is the first collision, there's a second, a third. Each time you system and environment collide, you refresh the density operator of your ancilla. In other words, you can think the environment consisting of a large number of identically prepared ancillas, and each time a system collides with an ancilla, all the ancillas are all initially in the same state. And as a consequence, given that you trace your you trace the degrees of freedom after each collision, before the system enters the following collision, will again be in a tensor product state between system and environment. Okay. If we want to go to an input-output formalism to a master equation, we must introduce time.
So this gives you a memoryless environment.
Correct. I will at this point. This will lead directly to a master equation in Liebland form, completely memoryless. And I will show you that basically the assumptions that you make are in a different, phrased in a different way, but precisely the same kind of assumption you make when you do a macroscopic derivation. When you do a phenomenological macroscopic derivation of a master equation, you basically do justifying on a different basis precisely the same assumption that we are the one we are making.
So things like quantum Brownian motion fall outside of this.
I'm coming from the quantum optics community. The idea is basically photon emission, for instance, atom interaction with the electromagnetic field. Okay. Now we must time enter into the description. And what we do is we assume that U is generated by a Hamiltonian, which we write in this way, G times V. G is a coupling constant, and V is a Hermitian operator. And therefore, for U, U is E to the minus I G over H bar V tau. Okay, tau is the time, is the duration of each individual collision. For the sake of simplicity, we assume that all collisions last for the same amount of time. Now, a reasonable assumption, if you want to derive a master equation, is that this tau is short. There are physical situations in which this tau needs not be short, like the micromaze. I will come to this later, but at the moment, let's assume time is short. And let's do some sort of weak coupling approximation. So in this case, if tau is short, it's reasonable to make a power series expansion of the time evolution operator. So this becomes G over H bar tau V minus 1/2 G square tau square H bar square V. G ignore higher order terms. Why we stop at a second order rather than a first order will be clear in a moment. Okay. So we got all the ingredients, and how do you derive a master equation? Of course, you look at what is rho n, given rho n minus 1, you divide by tau, and you take a time derivative. Even before taking this, let's see this, how you go from this to the time derivative, there is a clear assumption we are making already. So the idea is we are looking at your system stroboscopically. So we are looking at our system at time t, which is an integer multiple of tau. This is, again, the same assumption that you do when you do a macroscopic derivation of a master equation. The typical assumption, you do coarse graining. So this is the way you automatically include the coarse graining assumption into your formalism. The fact you assume that the dynamics last a fixed amount of time, tau, you assume that this tau is short, so it's reasonable to assume the dynamics is described by a time derivative, becomes a time derivative, but in practice you're not looking at the system during the collision, but only after each collision, okay? So in other words, for me, rho n minus 1 tau is a derivative with the meaning that we are not looking at something which happens on time scale which is shorter than tau. Again, this is a different way of phrasing the typical cross-grading assumption when you do macroscopic derivations.
Are you assuming there is no evolution of the system? Yeah.
For the sake of simplicity, yes.
I see. So that's even longer time than tau, right?
Sorry?
The evolution between the different collisions, that time is much longer than the time of a collision, probably.
Exactly. You look at time as integer multiple of tau. So you look at the system here and here and here. In the macro mesa, for instance, the idea is that, you're all familiar with the macro mesa, as I'm mentioning it several times already. The idea is you've got a cavity mode, and you drive the dynamics of your cavity by injecting atoms one after the other. And the injection rate is such that at most a single atom is within the cavity, and you look at the state of your system, of your cavity, only after the atom has left it. And the atom, being two-level system, can transfer excitation into the cavity, can absorb it. And the transit time tau, the time tau here is the transit time of the atom within the cavity. In the specific case of the macro mesa, this tau is not necessarily small. It can be finite, it can be relatively long. But in our case, we're assuming it to be very short. Now, for us, rho n, for us is what? Is trace of the environment of u rho. For us, well, let's call it eta at the moment. We don't have to specify it. The state of the environment. Rho n minus 1, u dagger. Okay. Then you plug this in. And what you get is the following, is trace of the environment, 1, Now, let's identify the various terms. Of course, the zero-order term, which comes from this. And this is what you use to define the time derivative, okay? So let's go to terms to order tau. The term to order tau, or if you like, terms to order g, are the following. I've got one row ig tau v blah blah, and this. So the first order term is trace over the environment, and what? Eta, commutator will be n. Just to be fast, okay, will be eta v commutator with rho n minus 1, which multiplies minus I g tau over h bar. Okay. Now, we will assume this to be 0. Why? The reason is that this can be written in terms of a commutator of an effective Hamiltonian times rho n. What is the effective Hamiltonian? The effective Hamiltonian is nothing but the trace of v on eta. So the average value of the interaction Hamiltonian on the density operator of your system. Now, this either is zero, and in most cases, that's what it is, because The interaction of Hamiltonian somehow induces fluctuations around the average dynamics of your system. If it is not zero, this is nothing but a new Hamiltonian term. And you can include this term as part of the free Hamiltonian of your system. Okay? So if this is zero, that's fine. In most cases, it is. If it is not zero, if the average... This is a partial trace. It's a trace of the environment. V acts on both system and environment. So this is an operator which still acts on the system. Okay? So this describes the average effect of the environment on your system. You assume that the average effect is zero. If it is not zero, you absorb this into the definition of the free Hamiltonian of your system. So for the sake of simplicity, we assume this to be zero. No substantial lack of generality. Now let's go to the second order term. Second order term will be the following. So terms of order t square, or if you like, to order g square.
Can you expand on the no substantial lack of generality? I mean, how little substance get lost? What do I lose?
Well, nothing. Take the example in which you have an atom interacting with the electromagnetic field. Okay. So either the field is in the vacuum. Okay. So the interaction Hamiltonian is of form D dot E, where this is a dipole and this is the electric field operator. Okay. Suppose you are in the vacuum. The expectation of vacuum, so this is an operator acting on your system, this is the operator acting on you. The average value of E in the vacuum is zero. But also for thermal state is zero. One is not zero. It's not zero when you have a driving classical field. In this case, this becomes D times E0. And where E0 is the expectation value of your driving on your state. Can be, for instance, a coherent state, whatever. And therefore, you describe your coherent states like an average classical field plus quantum fluctuations. The role of the fluctuation is something you include in the second order term, as we will see in a moment, while the average value of your electric field will be a coherent driving. And this is absorbed into the field dynamics of your system. For thermal state, typically the expectation value, if the coupling is linear, okay, is zero. If you got something which is proportional to the intensity, it's a different story, but again, you can always include this as a... Okay, now let's go to second order term. Second order term would be, the following would be a g square times square of h bar, trace of the environment, or what, of v, well, V minus 1/2 V square rho minus 1/2 rho V square. This term comes from this times this and over eta. Okay. This comes from this, this, and this. That's the first term. Then you have this one, this times this, and then you've got this rho times this. Okay, so these are. You begin to see that the structure is indeed very similar to. You can already see the structure of a master equation in Liebknecht form. So it's immediate. What we do is now let's define the jump operator. So let's define the operator K as and K as what? As G square root of tau over H bar E K V zero. The assumption I've made that is, again, eta is a pure state, which I label zero. And this is a specific basis in which I evaluate my trace. Now, why this is called jump operator is quite clear. It's called jump operator for the fact that the is an operator which induces jump from different states of the environment. Okay, so this jump is linked with the fact that whenever, okay, let's look. The AK is the basis in which we make our measurement, the way which you use to detect the environment, to evaluate the trace. Then you trash your result, but in principle is the basis in which you do them. This, as an effect of this observation, you observe a transition from the original environmental state to state EK. For instance, in the case of spontaneous emission, this is a state in which you observe a transition from the vacuum to the single photon state, for instance. Okay? As a consequence of the jump into the environment, you observe a jump in the dynamics of your system. Okay? And if you do this, you end up with the following mastery question, which
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
I'm a little bit stumbling on the indices that you have rho n minus 1 and in your equation, and then there's no index.
There is this.
Then there's rho n up there.
This is because simply I forgot. N minus 1, and this is n minus 1.
N minus 1, okay.
Okay. Yeah. I tend to be a bit loose with this. Okay. So at the end, you have a standard mastery equation, which is of this form. B by dt of rho is equal to sum over k. Gamma k L rho L dagger minus 1/2 L dagger L rho minus 1/2 rho L dagger L. Okay. Now let's look at the assumption that we have done in order to derive the mastery equation. The assumption which we have made is one. The environment is stationary. At each collision, the environment is always the same state. And B, at each step, you've got the density operator is of the form of the density operator of your system times the density operator of the environment. This is nothing but the Bohr-Markov approximation. At each step, you reset your environment, and you can identify, therefore, the time tau of the collision with the time tau that, in microscopic derivation of the mastery equation, is the coherence time of your environment. Within a time scale of the order of tau, in microscopic derivation of the mastery equation, the environment forgets any change which have been produced by its interaction with the environment, with the system. So tau, which in microscopic derivation is the correlation time of the environment, here becomes the collision time.
Shouldn't it be also the time between the collisions?
You said at the moment, we are assuming that there is no dynamics in between collisions, because we have ignored the free dynamics.
But the decorrelation time of the environment, that's the time that you need between collisions for the environment.
Okay, in this description, collision takes place one immediately after the other. Okay? So, what is the time scale in which the environment evolves? The time scale in which the effects of the interaction with the system are affecting the state of your environment is during the collision. As soon as the collision ends, the state of the environment is trashed.
I see.
And you put a new one.
It's like the correlation time of the environment is the time of coarse graining.
Exactly.
You are always coarse graining.
It is the time of coarse graining?
Any correlation.
Exactly. Okay. And it is the time in which you must take into account the change that the system does on the environment. But as soon as you trash, you input a fresh state of your... In the case of photons, I mean, a photon is emitted by the sun, interacts with this sheet of paper, is reflected, and comes to my eye. As soon as the photon is reflected, I mean, its change is unaffected, and the only time in which the system can imprint, can modify the state of the environment, is during the interaction between a sheet of paper and the next photon will be again the same initial state as the first, and again will interact and then reach my eye. Okay? Fine. Now let's go to a specific example. I'll work out a specific example. So, okay, sorry. Again, as mentioned before, it's memoryless. It's purely Markovian. There are no memory effects in the environment. The environment forgets. It's the same assumption as the is doing Bohr-Markov approximation. But the advantage is that, in principle, you, rather than thrashing the environment, you can observe it. You observe the environment, and depending on the observable in which you observe the environment, you induce a jump. You observe a jump in the environment, which corresponds to a jump in the state of your system. Okay. And then you recover the dynamics, which is predicted by the master equation, as an average over trajectories. I'm not going to talk about trajectories, but this system allows you a neat way in which you can describe how to measure the environment. Because the environment is something which interacts with the system for a short period of time, after which you can do whatever you want with it. You can measure, you can detect it. And if you're interested, for instance, as you do in quantum thermodynamics, in the heat exchange between system and environment, you simply can evaluate the rate of variation of the local, the expectation value of the local Hamiltonian, of the... First of all, we've done something on the Landauer principle, which has been analyzed in terms of collision models, which allows you to link the cost of erasing information rather than as an input-output formalism in terms of power, how much information per second you are erasing. And this allows you to quantify, to put an upper bound on the amount of information you erase, resolving dynamics in time. But given that the system is... Okay, it's quite simple. It's worth playing with a specific example, which is decoherence. Why decoherence? Again, because it's simple, conceptually it's neat, and this allows us to see, on the one hand, how can this be viewed as a way to do a weak measurement of your system, and another way is, again, we can do in slightly more quantitative terms what you described yesterday, the unfolding of quantum Darwinism by the environment, which step after step acquires a bit of information about your system. To do this, we assume that the Hamiltonian, the interaction Hamiltonian, to be of the form G, sigma z for the system, sigma x for the environment. Okay. So our environment consists of a large number of ancillas. Each ancilla is a qubit, and the system itself is a qubit. So the input state is a qubit, which is the one which we are, whose reduced dynamics we are interested in. And the system interacts sequentially with a set of ancillas. Each ancilla is itself a qubit. So it's a spin-spin interaction. Why do I choose this kind of coupling Hamiltonian? The reason is that this is clear immediately, induces a conditional dynamics, which is simple to analyze. For a shortcut, let's see, just by a brute force substitution, if we plug this V here, what are the jump operator? Okay, so in this case, there is... we must evaluate, okay, the basis in which we evaluate the trace is 0 for the environment, 1 for the environment, and we must evaluate 0 v 0, and this is 0, okay, because this is 0 sigma x, this is proportional to 0 sigma x for the environment, 0, and this is, the expectation value is equal to 0, and this is basically justifies this standard assumption that the average value is 0. On the other hand, you have a jump operator, which is 1, sigma z for your system, sigma x for your environment, 0, which turns out that your jump operator is sigma z. So by just plugging this into this formula, you get the standard master equation which describes the phasing of decoherence. Okay, d by dt of rho is equal to gamma sigma z rho sigma z minus rho. Okay, so standard phasing, standard decoherence. So far, so good. But what is worth doing is to go back to the original description and to look what happens step by step. Okay? To do this, so this is the master equation. You can solve it. So you get all the information you are interested in. But it's worth looking at the process unfolds in time. So let's first look at the first box. Let's look at the first collision. Okay? If this is V, U is what? U is E to the minus I, E over H bar, tau, sigma Z, sigma X. Okay? But this is a conditional rotation of your qubit. What does it mean? Suppose that you start with a state which is C0, 0 plus C1, 1. And the qubit is the ancilla is initially in state 0. Okay, this operator rotates 0 around the x-axis. But the direction of rotation, so we start, it's a 0 direction, but the direction of rotation would be this or this, depending on the state of your system. So you're rotating your ancilla, the state of your ancilla, into different direction depending on the state of your system. So these are conditional dynamics. Conditional dynamics is what you need to induce entanglement between system and environment. So this will be of the form C0, 0, phi 0, plus C1, 1. Phi 1. What is phi 1 and phi 0? That's easy. If we write the Hamiltonian as H bar capital omega, which simplifies our notation, phi 0 will be cos omega tau 0 minus I one, while phi 1 is simply cos omega tau 0 minus plus I. Okay, you see different sign here. Now let's look at the density operator of the reduced density operator of your system. Will be the following: C0 square, C0 C1 star, phi 1, phi 0, C0 star C1, phi 0. Phi 1, C1 squared. You go from a pure state to a mixed one, and the amplitude of the coherence is decreased by the scalar products between Phi 1 and Phi 0. If Phi 1 and Phi 0 were orthogonal, this would go to 0. Why? Because you destroy all coherence because the environment has complete knowledge of your system. If you look at the environment knows everything about your system, and therefore you destroy coherences. But here, let's suppose that this omega tau is relatively small, and the environment knows just a little bit about your system. Okay? And what is this? The scalar product, phi 1, phi 0, is just a forward algebra, is simply cos 2 omega tau. Okay? If you plug this here, in the definition of the jump, I forgot to mention, you get as gamma is equal to omega tau. Here you see that what is the scalar product between phi 1 and phi 0 for arbitrary rotation. Suppose it is small. The environment knows a little bit about the system. But now suppose you leave after the first collision, you collide twice. In this case, you got phi 0 for the first ancilla, phi 0 for the second ancilla, phi 1 for the first ancilla, phi 1 for the second ancilla. And if you got n, after n collision, this would be n copies, n different copies of your phi state. Which means that after n collision, this will be much smaller. At each collision, this off-diagonal matrix element will decrease gradually. Will become smaller and smaller. Why? Because after a while, the environment knows everything about your system. The scalar product between phi 1 and phi 0 is different from 0, but if you take the nth power, it means that if you look at a block of n ancillas, if n is sufficiently large, then the environment knows everything about your system, which is basically what we saw yesterday. So what you can do is you can if we write this as k, so for me k is 5 0 5 1, then you can write k to the n as e to the minus gamma tau n, or if you like, e to the minus capital gamma n. And this capital gamma is nothing but minus log k. Okay. How many ancilla do you need to know exactly what the environment to know exactly about the system? You need a number of ancilla which is of the order of gamma minus 1. What is the redundancy of your system? Is n log k. In other words, we see with this model exactly what it told us yesterday. At the beginning, the qubit know a little bit, one after the other, they gain some information, but after a fraction, which is of the order of n log k, if you add, at time scale of the order of gamma, the system is completely defaced. Completely defaced means that this off-diagonal matrix element are zero. Okay? The environment has gained complete information about the state of your system. If you add extra ancillas, you simply get redundant copies of the information stored here, and you get a plateau. Okay? And the redundancy, again, is n log k.
It's n log k with what delta? You know what I'm saying?
I'm very sloppy with the mathematics. But it's 1 minus delta is...
That's right.
Okay,
that's
yeah, sure.
So
it's a rough, I mean, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Other magnitude.
Do you have an exact? I'm interested in exact solution. I'm curious if you have it.
No, it's simple. It's this.
No. I mean, for the system, right? But for the environment, right. We have a density matrix which has dimensionality which increases after each collision.
Okay.
Right? Doubles.
Okay. I see what you mean. N for me, the fractional number. This n for me is the number of ancillas you have considered after that particular point. Okay. So as you grow, I mean, the fraction is the redundancy. I mean, this fraction n depends on which time are you looking at this. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm curious if you can calculate things like mutual entropy for.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll show you.
Good.
Now that's what we did. Yes.
I'm interested. I think you had a paper on this, right?
We have a paper on a different model, but we are writing something about this. And the reason we can evaluate this is because we can play with the fact that the overall environment is pure. So given it's impure, if you do tricky partitions and you look... Okay,
I'm looking forward.
Okay. So far about the phasing about the coherence. The interesting point, what about if we change the interaction Hamiltonian? What if we want to obtain, for instance, an amplitude damping, spontaneous emission? Okay, of course, but you all know that the Hamiltonian which describes this is of the form of G, you can write it as H bar omega sigma plus sigma minus plus sigma minus sigma plus. You say, but typically you've got spontaneous emission in terms of field. So you've got basically the James Cummings Hamiltonian, sigma plus A plus sigma minus A dagger. It's true, but as long as the collision time is small, and as long as the fraction of the energy which is transferred from the system to the environment is small, the fact you have a harmonic oscillator, the fact you have a qubit, is irrelevant. Because you always transfer a small amount of energy at each collision, so you do not saturate the levels. Of course, if the duration of your collision is finite, and you can have full energy transfer from system to the environment, using a qubit as an oscillator or using harmonic oscillator makes a huge difference. There are two different things. Okay. Fine. Briefly, I'll show you how this system is useful to derive, but I will just mention briefly. Perhaps I've been a bit too fast, as usual. Okay. What about non-Markovian dynamics? So far, the system we've been looking at is a fully Markovian dynamics. The Bassel equation is in Lindblad form. Can we introduce extra ingredients to take into account non-Markovian dynamics? The answer is yes. I will not write down the Bassel equation that you obtain at the end, but I'll show you what the model is and. I'll describe you two different models, which turn out to be completely equivalent. Model A. Let me use color chalk. I love color chalk. Okay, you have a system. System is in green. And you have a set of ancillas. Okay. You have a unitary operator between... How can you introduce memory? How can you introduce non-Markovian dynamics? You must have a way in which information that the ancilla is gained on the system as the nth collision must somehow travel into the environment and be still present in the environment at the n plus one collision. How you do this? Okay, suppose that system and environment collides at the nth collision. The ancilla gains some information about the environment. How does the environment keep some memory? Simple. You do a probabilistic swap between ancilla n and n plus 1. So in other words, with probability p, the ancilla are left unchanged. With the probability 1 minus p, you swap them. Not coherently, incoherent. Why not coherent? Because we didn't manage to solve the question if they were coherent. But for incoherent swap, you can do everything analytically. In Laplace-Raffman, everything is neat.
So what does it mean, incoherent swap?
With probability P, Okay. So suppose you have a density operator rho 1, rho 2,
yeah.
And the if you do an incoherent swap, will be with probability p. Let's call it, okay, rho 1, rho tilde. Okay. If with probability p will be rho 1, rho 2, you swap the state incoherently. With a given probability, you let the state as it is. Otherwise, you swap. A coherent swap will be cos identities plus I sine swap. Where swap is a coherent swap.
So swap is a swap.
This is a coherent swap. This is a probabilistic swap.
Yeah.
You talk.
So there is no gate.
No. There is no gate. It's incoherent.
The gate is a sign there at the end, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, here, what you do is simply imagine you physically swap them.
Sometimes.
Okay? Sometimes, with a certain probability.
That's basically equivalent to having a mirror which bounces some of your things which interacted with your system.
Yes, but you destroy the coherence.
But not all of them.
Not all of them, but you destroy part of the coherence. I mean, a mirror would be a coherent swap, because in principle, you must have a way in which you destroy possible coherences. Okay? A mirror is, if everything is neat, is a sort of a coherent swap. You reflect it completely. Otherwise, here, with a certain probability, okay, so the following. It collides with the first one, and now the system is moving one step forward and would like to collide to this. But you can decide, you toss a coin, and depending on the side of tail, you leave the ancilla as they are, or you swap them.
Yeah, but I mean, what I had in mind...
It's ballistic, it's like a ball.
You introduce a mirror once in a while with a frequency which gives you P.
Yes, pairwise, exactly, pairwise. Okay. And you do this, and you can solve a master equation. You get a master equation of the kernel, plus a master equation which keeps a memory of the initial state of the environment. But this system is equivalent to another system, which is the following. You have, again, your system. You've got, let's call it a memory. And then you have your ancillas. Now, the system and the memory interact coherently with the U. And then what you do a probabilistic swap between the memory and the ancillas. You can prove that the reduced dynamics of the system is precisely the same. So two apparently different models will give rise to the same master equation. But what is nice with this third model? The fact that by construction, the master equation is A, non-Markovian, because you've got information flux, you've got a memory within the dynamics. But B, what is important is that it's, by construction, completely positive. So it's not a phenomenological master equation. But it's a master equation which, by construction, is built up of unitaries and partial trace. And being a construction made of unitaries and partial trace, you are sure the dynamics is completely positive. In other words, the dynamics is a legitimate one. Okay, so this is the advantage of this. And I've been a bit too fast, so I've got time for questions. And do you have anything? Well, I can give you the references if you...
Can you explain the second model a bit more? I mean, I'm not... Is the green thing always the system?
This is the memory. This is the memory.
So the memory is like an extra ancilla?
Exactly. It's like an extra ancilla. This is your system, and these are the ancillas. So the system does not interact with the ancillas directly. It interacts with the ancillas through a memory. The dynamics is similar, but it's different at the same time. Got an atom within a cavity. The atom interacts with the cavity, but the cavity interacts with the external field. So the interaction between the atom and the external field is mediated by the cavity. Of course, the dynamic, this is not a probabilistic swap. But the logic is basically the same. You've got a system which interacts with the degree of freedom, which is an ancilla. And the ancilla interacts is a memory. And the memory interacts with the bath ancillas. And the way it interacts with the bath ancilla is just by probabilistic swap. So you swap the state between these two. And if you think a bit, is you can convince yourself this is equivalent to this kind of.
If I were to draw a logical circuit, quantum circuit,
right.
For the first model, I know how to do it more or less, right?
Right.
What I would have is I would have a system living in a top thing. Then I would have a bunch of synod-like gates, but they are incomplete. They do not rotate completely. They rotate sort of in the opposite directions by angle theta.
But the
right?
You okay? Yes. This.
So it's a different. So they give you what you had before.
Some sort of, yes.
Yeah. And then once in a while, I would have a swap between the gate, which means the ancilla, which isn't yet used, and the one which was already used.
Exactly. So basically, once in a while, yeah. You collide twice with the same ancilla you collided before.
But the logical circuit for the second one is different.
Okay, here is you have the first one which collides with the memory.
Yeah.
And then the memory somehow transfers to the environment the information. How does it? It does it by a probabilistic swap. So sometimes it does not get rid of the information it has gained on the system. Sometimes it copies its state to the ancilla. And then you shift one more. Okay? It does it not coherently, it does it probabilistically, but the sequence of steps is the following. He keeps on reading the state of your system, and once in a while he copies what he has learned on the ancillas. The master equation you get is exactly the same. Actually, we started with this. In order to solve this, we map this into this, which is easier to analyze, and we got the master equation. In terms of references, okay. There's another thing which I'd like to tell you briefly, which are cascaded systems. Okay, this master equation, which are non-Markovian but completely positive by constructions, we've studied in a series of PRA paper in 2013. And again in 2016. And again and we extended this to analyze what we call Markovian depth, in a way, and with Bassano. These are all with Francesco Ciccarello, and this is with Francesco Ciccarello and Bassano Vacchini and Steve Campbell is a PRA 98. Okay. I was about to forget another model which can be nicely analyzed. Are what we call cascaded system, and well, not just us, but are known as cascaded system. Let's start with this drawing, okay? Suppose your system is bipartite. So suppose your system consists of two qubits. But the two qubits are not interacting at the same time with the environment, but they are interacting with the environment one after the other. Example, suppose that your environment is a fiber, an optical fiber, and your system, your qubit, is a photon with a given polarization, and you send the polarization through the channel. The channel has some properties which fluctuates in time, and typically by refringence, and you randomly rotate the state of your of the polarization of your cube of your photon, and this will induce the phasing, of course. But then you send a second photon after the first one. Now, what is possible are two things. Either the environment has the same property as it had when you inject the first photon, which means that the noise which acts on both of them is the same, or in the meanwhile, the state of your fiber has been reset because it has too much time has gone between the first injection and the second. In this case, you've got independent noise. So we want a picture in which you have a quantum channel, quantum noise, which acts on two different subsystems sequentially, one after the other, not at the same time. So we know how to treat the interaction between the first system and the environment. What you can do, you introduce, so this is system one, and do the same with system two. But what you do is the following. You do not trace the degree of freedom of the environment, but you inject them here. And in the meanwhile, the environment may have changed. So see what happens. You've got the first system is interaction with the ancilla. The ancilla evolves in time according to a map which we call M. This is an arbitrary map, which may leave its property the same or can change it. And then the second system interacts with the environment, which has A interacts with the first system, and B undergone some sort of time change. And then you trash. And then you repeat this. Okay? So this is a cascaded system in which the two systems interact in a cascade with the environment. And the environment, in the meanwhile, each ancilla, before being traced out, can change its state. And of course, you have a flux of information, of energy, of anything from the first system, depending on the specific form of the coupling, from the first system to the second. Systems of this form have been first analyzed by Crispin Gardner. He was looking at this system. You've got two cavities. You know his input-output formalism. He described a cavity with a field which comes in and a field which comes out. And within the cavity, you've got atoms or whatever. And his approach is the following. You've got an input field, which can be a signal, but it contains also quantum noise. This quantum, the environment interacts with the your system within the cavity, and then the field comes out. And then the field which comes out after the first cavity is fed into the second. But in a way, you don't have back action. You don't have that the field come from the second cavity goes back to the first one. So the propagation is one direction. These dynamics can be mapped exactly in these collision models. So you have a way in which, by collision models, you can analyze a situation in which two separate systems interact sequentially with an environment which, in the meanwhile, changes. And you get a master equation, which is, by construction, again, completely positive, and is of the form of a dissipator acting on system 1, plus a dissipator acting on system 2, plus a term which acts from 1 to 2, but not the other way around. What is interesting, and then this can be cast in a limblet form with a dissipator acting on 1 and 2 plus an effective Hamiltonian, which is purely dissipative. In other words, if there is no dissipation, there is no effective coupling. So you have a collective decay plus an effective mutual interaction. This is we found this form, but this was independently discovered also by Peter Zoller. We did exactly the same thing, not with the collision formalism, but with the standard microscopic derivation. I think now I'm really done. And you've got questions? Let me switch glasses.
I want to ask you, but I think it's probably for private discussion,
sure,
more about how much you can solve this. Things that I talked about.
Sure, before. I'll do it now.
Okay, cool. You can talk about it. Good.
So if this probability P for swapping is 1, do you have a completely non-Markovian dynamics?
Or? Absolutely. It keeps interacting always in the same system. So it's basically the same as a coherent dynamics with always the same system.
So have you tested this in
yes.
terms of
no, no, you can
immediately oscillations for spontaneity?
You can it's not in the paper because in the paper we're interested in the Mastery equation, but you immediately see that basically you have a coherent dynamics always the same system.
I've got some questions that were sort of asked before. Normally, when we're thinking about this type of formalism, we're thinking about quantum jumps.
And right.
The whole sort of thing is our coarse graining of quantum jumps. And somehow, the effective measurement that you make in the environment is one that is equivalent to photon counting. So when we sort of trace over in its regular form. Is there any way to take quantum state diffusion for equivalently homodyne detection on the environment and recast it in this type of form?
Absolutely. Is again, rather than thrashing, you measure it. And depending on how you measure, you get different jump operators. But this is very natural, because you got just a single chunk of environment. And you probe the ancillas one by one.
And the things that come out there, do they have the same properties in terms of the dynamical maps that you can just sort of apply the maps one after the other? I guess it's a divisible map, it's a Markovian system, so it must
be... The assumption must be that you do the measurement before you enter the next stage. So if you do the measurement, you acquire your information, and you know what is the state of the system which is fed at the next collision. Otherwise, if you don't do this before, if you do not have knowledge of this before, it's like tracing out.
So the thing that I would find... See exactly what you're sort of saying here, intuitively. In terms of the details of how I would do it, my sort of main concern would be this, that in the jump approach, I know exactly how I'm going to coarse grain. I'm concerned when I do homodyne detection, I would get a quantum state diffusion equation where I would have, I think I'm about to answer my own question, where I would have a white noise process, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, then how do I go to the limit there where the time step goes to zero, where the sort of
no, this is something we've not tested. No, we haven't tested it.
But I guess, actually, that you have the same frequency separation as you always do, and so you actually only need white noise up to some frequency, up to some frequency scale, which is your core.
No, the white noise stuff is something that Francesco has been looking at. You can show that collision models are equivalent to white noise injection, strictly equivalent. But I'll send you. I'll point out that
I'd be really curious.
It's not something. Okay.
So that for me is sort of the missing technical step. Although I imagine it must work somehow in terms of again coarse graining, where you actually only need the noise to be white up to some.
No. He is completely equivalent to. You can show that for fields if your ancillas are field states rather than qubit. I mean, for qubits are easy to describe. But you can do it with harmonic oscillator states, for instance. You can show that this is strictly equivalent to the injection of white noise, of being a white noise situation.
Okay, I'll be really curious to see that. Perfect, thank you.
Good
thank
lunch.
You very much again, Massimo.
That's the end. Thanks for organizing it.